Vectis Radio, FM 104.6. Our broadcasters are all ages and abilities. This is what makes us your local station. VectisRadio.com.
And what a show we've got today. In the studio with Judith and me at this very moment are May and Carol Tro, and they are the most prolific authors on the Isle of Wight. They have written between them, I think, 50 or even more books, many of which are novels, many of which are detective novels, but also some really, really interesting non-fiction novels. And thank you both very much for coming in. First of all, I'd say it's amazing that you, as a husband and wife couple, can write together. Can you tell us a little bit about that? Because Judith and I, well, it would end up being a murder mystery if by the time we got to the end of the first page. How on earth can you sit and write together?
Well, first of all, we think of the plot. We always did that together, even when I wasn't writing with him.
Yeah.
We'd go for a walk or something like that and think of the plot. Or I would think of the plot and then he would write the book. Now I think of the plot and we both write the book. So it's quite easy.
But that's don't you have sort of hugely difficult evenings where one of you wants to go in one direction and the other wants to go in another direction?
There was once when we had the wrong person who did it. And neither of us realised until about halfway through.
Right.
But that's only happened once. That will only ever happen to anybody once.
Wow.
But no, we don't argue. I sometimes sort of fall a bit in love with the characters, and he's much stricter. He'll kill anyone.
Right.
But if I get to like them, I like to keep them alive. Oh. So we did have one argument about someone being pushed down a well, but
yeah.
and he won that one.
So. Now, a lot of these characters in the novels that you write are historical characters or fictional characters that you're reusing in a way, like in Inspector Lestrade. Now, is this to do with the fact that you were a teacher, Mai?
Yes, I think so. Obviously, I've been teaching history for years and years and years, and it's in the blood, to be honest.
So you were at Ryde High School
teaching? I was at Ryde High School, first of all, as head of history, and then I became head of sixth form, and I did a number of different jobs within what is now Ryde Academy.
Yeah.
But history has always been there as the background. So whatever I write has got an historical flavour to it. Whether it's factual or fictional remains to be seen.
Yes.
But the historical background is common to it all, yeah.
So one of the ones you're best known for, Inspector Lestrade, is based on the bungling detective who Sherlock Holmes always managed to show up.
That's right. I pinched him completely, and it all started because of the Basil Rathbone films, if you remember those.
Mm. Yes.
They were particularly shown on BBC on Friday evenings at 6 o'clock.
Yeah.
And I watched them because they're great fun. It was Basil Rathbone being way over the top, Nigel Bruce as Dr. Watson being ineffective, and I thought, this is ludicrous. This tall, unknown character turns up with a bowler hat and he stands there at the door of 221B Baker Street.
Yeah.
And he says, can you help us, Mr. Holmes, because we have no clue at all how to do it down at the yard.
Yeah.
And I thought, come on. So I turned the tables.
Yeah.
Lestrade became the crime solver, and Holmes was actually a junkie, as in the heroin addiction.
Ah, interesting.
Who got in the way constantly of police inquiries. So it started from there, really.
Now, you're not the only person to write about Inspector Lestrade, are you? Because we've listened to some Radio 4 radio plays. Have you done any radio plays with Lestrade?
No, I haven't. No.
Except for one that was coming exclusively to Vectis Radio.
Absolutely.
In just a few weeks.
That's right.
Could we get back to Sherlock Holmes for a minute? Why do you think there is this enduring fascination with the Sherlock Holmes stories?
I think because people like the idea of somebody who is smarter than the police. In most countries, obviously, the police solve crimes. That's what they're paid to do. But we're all very aware of procedurals. We know that they are hidebound by techniques. They don't have enough resources to get the job done properly. Whereas somebody with a razor-sharp brain who can cut corners in a way.
Yes.
And there's a long tradition of this in crime fiction. If you think about The Four Just Men, for example, from the 1930s, Wallace, you've got the same thing there. They can cheat. they break the law in order to solve the crime. Police can't do that.
Yes.
Not without getting into a great deal of difficulty and the case being dismissed. So someone like Holmes, super intelligent, super bright, can almost get away with murder.
And I suppose he is solving the crime, isn't he? This is in the days before forensic science. He is solving these crimes by his powers of observation, his intelligence, and his guile, really.
Yes,
sometimes.
He is. Absolutely.
And do you think the whole sort of Victorian setting is appealing to us as well still?
It is. It's very much Jack the Ripper country, this. Mm. It's Whitechapel with the swirling mist.
And the cobbles and
cobbles,
the horses.
That's right. And some girl swinging her way with a feather boa.
Yes.
She's woefully underdressed for the 1880s.
Yes, yes.
She's usually Barbara Windsor.
And wearing high heels.
Absolutely.
On those cobbled streets.
She looks at the camera and screams and blood pours down. And up come the titles. It is absolutely artificial. The idea of Jack being a gentleman with a cape and a top hat is pure nonsense, but it works.
This is a melodrama, isn't
melodrama, it? Melodrama, absolutely.
Well, yes. I'd love to come back to Jack the Ripper again, because there's so many island connections there. The other novels that you write sort of go back a little bit further in history, back beyond Victorian times to the time of William Shakespeare, Kit Marlowe, who of course was his rival poet.
Much and better.
And he was a very good looking man, wasn't he? And there was he ended up, I think, being stabbed in an alehouse, didn't he?
He did. The official verdict from the coroner's report is that he was stabbed in a quarrel over a bill.
Ah.
Who was going to pay for the day's food and drink.
Yes.
So it was a pretty miserable end if you accept that version.
Yeah.
We don't, of course, accept that version. If you think that the three people that he was with at the time were all involved in the spy trade themselves,
yeah.
One of them we know was a murderer anyway.
Yes.
These are some dodgy people with an awful lot to hide, and I think it's a lot more complicated than the coroner's verdict would suggest.
Ah, fascinating. Well, look, stick with us, please, Karen and Mai, because I'd love to hear about Jack the Ripper, and also some of the other books you're working on. I've just got from Amazon The Black Book, and I'm really fascinated by that, and we'll talk about that in just a few moments. But first, here's Mark Almond and Soft Cell and Bedsitter. Mark Almond and Soft Cell in Bedsitland there. That was Bedsitter, taking us back to the 80s. Loving. Now, Mai and Carol Troll are in the studio at the moment, and we're talking about the wonderful books that they've written. A huge variety of books, but a lot of them have a historical theme. We've been talking about the novels, about Kit Marlowe, about Inspector Lestrade. There are also quite a few other series of novels. I think there's one that goes back even further in time to Roman times, isn't there?
Yes, it's called Britannia, and it is all about the end of the Roman occupation, which is a period that we know almost nothing about. The historical record is really very thin indeed. If you look up the old textbook, it'll say the legions left in 410. Boom, end.
Yeah.
No explanation. The date is highly dubious.
Yes,
but I was struck by the idea of this whole culture coming to an end. It wasn't just the soldiers going, it was a way of life going. On the island, we have a number of Roman villas, and within 20 years of that famous 410 date, they vanished. We don't know what happened to them. We don't know why they became empty, but they did. And I found that idea quite fascinating.
So it all happened very, very quickly then. So it's a sort of hard Rexit or something like that.
Yeah, very good.
Yes, can we use that?
But the Roman Empire had been around for a hell of a long time.
Yes.
I mean, 500 years of empire is long enough, most people would say. So it had its time. You know, it was bound to collapse eventually.
Yeah.
And it did.
Well, it's fascinating. Now, obviously, you were a history teacher. Do you get people sort of coming up to you in the street and saying, "Hello, sir. You know, I've read your stories and..."
Yes, I do. I began writing while I was still teaching, so that they remember that, because obviously it's unusual. And I do still get people now. I mean, I've been retired for nearly 11 years, but they still come up to me and say, "Hello, Mr. Trow, how are you? I saw your latest book."
Or, "Oh, that's nice.
I've done the odd bit of TV, of a documentary or something, and they've seen that."
It's
very good.
Oh, good.
I love it.
Now, let's talk about some other books that you've been doing, because you mentioned TV there. I think you've been on the Discovery Channel, haven't you, talking about a book that you were writing on Jack the Ripper.
Yes.
And Jack the Ripper, of course, has a lot of annotations on the Isle of Wight, because there's some theories that involve Isle of Wight people. But I think you believe Jack the Ripper was somebody completely different.
I believe Jack the Ripper was a total non-entity called Robert Mann, who was a mortuary assistant.
Right.
He would have handled the corpses literally of three, possibly four, of Jack's victims.
Yes.
If you follow modern profiling, psychological profiling, then we're looking for someone like that, for a non-entity, an average Joe you'd walk past in the street.
Right.
That's what serial killers are really like.
Yeah.
They are not close to the royal family, that they are not mad doctors, that they are not foreign agents.
Yes.
They are ordinary people.
Now, that's interesting, because the other ones that are tied to the Isle of Wight, and I don't think your chap, Robert Mann, is tied to the Isle of Wight at all. There's Prince Albert Victor, Duke of Clarence, who was Queen Victoria's son. There's a bust of him in Osborne House. I mean, that was bandied around. Michael Maybrick, who was the mayor of Ryde. Bruce Robinson had a book, They All Love Jack, recently, which I bought. Unfortunately, I never read, because it was about 500 pages long, and every other word began with F. That was all about a Masonic conspiracy, wasn't it?
Sure.
And then you just mentioned off-air a guy called Rich Gissing.
Mm.
Who was he?
Gissing was a member of the public. He was a writer, he was a journalist. And he, in common with many journalists, was wandering around the East End trying to get an angle on who this man might have been.
Yes.
In that the police were achieving nothing.
Yeah.
And for a while, because he was talking to prostitutes and so on, he became a suspect himself.
Oh.
Didn't last for long. Maybe 3 or 4 days was all, and then he is out of the scene.
Yeah.
But the other people you're talking about, like Maybrick and Prince Albert Victor, these were not contemporary suspects. These were people who have emerged from the Ripper industry, which is now absolutely immense.
But what we're talking about is somebody who had a sort of keen knowledge of medicine and biology, and, you know, a lot of forensic know-how. I mean, Carol, that sounds a bit like you, doesn't it? I mean,
she's not old enough. Give her a break.
I wasn't Jack the Ripper, I promise.
Because you didn't work as a teacher, did you? You worked.
Yes, I was the laboratory manager at the private hospital, the Orchard Hospital. I left in the year 2000.
Do you sort of give advice on all the sort of forensic aspects of these
cases? I'm his blood woman.
Ah, fantastic.
Because the thing is that you read books and books are wrong often. And there was one book on the Romanovs, which Mai has also dabbled with.
Oh.
and the writer said, "Oh, this person that I met randomly on Waterloo Station or whatever it was had to be Prince Alexei, because he was group A positive, which is incredibly rare."
What?
In the South, it's actually, I think, the more common than O positive. So not really so rare as all that. And so, yes, we've actually sort of, he's used my expertise, such as it is, quite often.
Yeah, I thought that might be a bit of a synergy there. Good. Well, stick with us. We're going to have some ads and then some beautiful South, but we've got lots more to talk about, because I want to ask you about your time on cruises. I know because you do all these brilliant books, you manage to get away on these fabulous cruises, and I just want to ask about how on earth do you blag that? So let's have some ads first.
Vectis Radio, FM 104.6. For the people, by the people.
It's the Wednesday afternoon show here. You've got another 2.5 hours of us. Isn't that wonderful? Well, it is wet outside, so keep yourselves warm. We're talking about warm destinations. Maya and Carol Tro are in the studio with us. They've written some wonderful books separately and together. But one thing they've done, which is really exciting, and I'm very, very jealous, is they've gone to talk about their books on cruise liners. And how many cruises have you guys been on?
Oh, 25.
25?
Wow. Somebody has to do it. Right?
Now, I'm hoping there's nobody from the Inland Revenue listening, but you know, these are tours that are paid for. What do you talk about? Is it history or is it your books?
They tend to be history based, yes.
Right.
But some cruise lines, it's all about the destination.
Yeah.
So it's location, location, location. It's yes. Where your history of where you are going to.
Yeah.
So we haven't quite got carte blanche to do what we like.
Yeah.
But we have talked about writing. We've actually done writing workshops.
Yeah, writing workshops.
Oh, fantastic, yeah.
And everyone asks, how do you start? And I always point at him because I hate a blank white page.
Yes.
They're always staggered to find that he writes in longhand, and they would be even more staggered if they could see his handwriting, which is frankly shocking.
Do you still write in longhand, Mike?
I do. There's no finer way, James. Come
and
on.
Well, and Carol,
I type it out.
Oh, you must be a saint.
I am.
But you don't type it onto a typewriter. You do onto a word processor.
No, his first book. He wrote for me during a school holiday, and just handed it to me at the end. I don't know how he did it because I was at work and our son was 2.5.
Yeah.
So well done him. Presumably he nailed Tally to the floor or something. I don't know. And I thought it was wonderful. It was the first Lestrade book, The Adventures of Inspector Lestrade.
Yeah.
And I said, I'm going to type this out. And I typed it out on a little portable, you know, the ones that go away in the in the cover. Kept going wrong, Tippex, you know, that kind of thing. Then we realised that we'd used a real person's name as one of the characters. So we had to go through and Tippex it all out and find a name that was the same length to go in the space.
Oh, no.
But very, very quickly I went to computers. We had an old Amstrad. Do you remember those?
Oh, gosh, yes.
So a book would take something like 10 floppy disks to store it.
Yeah, I can remember that.
And then
yeah.
you'd lose the floppy and all that kind of thing. But now, obviously, it's computer. And my speed, my typing speed, is far quicker than I could possibly write longhand.
Well, it is amazing, actually, sort of looking back. I remember 20 years ago, I was when I was working, I wanted to get a colour photograph into a document. It took 3 hours to scan it and 4 hours to actually print out that page.
Yeah.
And you just can't believe those kind of things happen. Now, on these cruises, do you ever get people who've been on a cruise, you know, when you first started cruising and giving these lectures, who comes up to you about 5 years later and said, I've written a book, what do you think of it?
Not that, but we have had a kind of repeat. There was one guy who'd seen us before,
right,
on a different cruise, a different destination.
Yeah.
But that's the only doubling.
It's amazing when you think how many we've done.
Yes.
And how many people that means.
Yeah.
We've actually only met about 3 people twice.
So the big question is, how on earth do you get into sort of putting yourself up for one of these cruises?
Well,
we don't know because he was invited.
I was invited. Ah. It happened originally because my agent, as then was supposed to be lecturing. He couldn't do it. Asked me if I wanted to, and I said, all right. I wasn't keen because I'd never been on a liner before, and I thought I'd be bored. I thought, hell, you can't get off. You're stuck with the same people day after day.
Yeah.
Not for me, but I did it. And we haven't looked back. It was absolutely brilliant.
And how are you treated on board? I mean, do they sort of lock you up in the bowels and then sort of let you out in the evening? Or do you get some really nice places?
We only travel with a certain cruise line now, which treat us like kings. It's fabulous.
Fantastic.
And so we only go with them.
Yeah.
There have been some where we have been in the bowels or an inside cabin, which is horrid because you don't know whether it's day or night. You don't wake up properly. You don't go to sleep properly. You're only allowed to sort of eat in a certain cafe and whatever. But the one we go to now is just wonderful.
Wow, brilliant.
And it is a proper holiday. We make it our holiday, really.
Yeah.
And we only go on 2 a year, maximum.
Now, I understand, unfortunately, Maya, you had a heart attack earlier this year, so you're not able to go on the sort of next cruise that was planned.
That's right. We've had to cancel one because it was it would have been quite demanding. It was from Japan to Canada, which is a lot of flying time to get you there in the first place, and a lot of sailing time.
Yeah.
And I didn't really feel I was up to that, so we cancelled that one.
But,
one later in the year, which is nearer to home, we've got that one still lined up. Yes.
Okay. Good. Can I just talk to you in a few moments after we've listened to some madness about your heart attack? Because we saw about it in the county press. First of all, Judith and I were very, very, very sorry, but it is marvellous to see that you've made a great recovery. And I think that's in no small part thanks to Carol.
Oh, yes.
And also thanks to the Isle of Wight and Hampshire Air Ambulance Service.
Absolutely.
So we'll talk about both of those in a minute. Thank you. Madness can't touch us now. It's 1:42. You've got us for another 2 hours and 18 minutes until Mr. Chris Mute. Oh no, he's gone, unfortunately. But it's Chris Sullivan coming into the studio. Forgive me. At 4 o'clock this afternoon, we're with Mai and Carol Trow, and we're just talking about Mai's unfortunate heart episode. Not with thinking of the Harp Festival there. You had a heart episode. In fact, it was a cardiac arrest, wasn't it, earlier this year, Mai? And Carol, I think, very, very bravely stayed with you, giving you compressions until the ambulance arrived. Tell us about that, Carol.
Well, yes, he just sort of collapsed, and I don't know where it comes from. You just do everything right.
Yeah.
People who say, I couldn't possibly... Don't be silly, because think of the alternative, really.
Yeah.
And so dialed 999 with my thumb while I was doing compressions with my other hand.
Yeah.
And I just kept on doing that until the ambulance came.
Yeah, wow, fantastic. But it didn't stop there, did it? Because you needed to get very quickly to the mainland.
Yes, the air ambulance was called and came, and everyone was absolutely fabulous. I've never seen such a seamless operation in my life. A&E at St Mary's were wonderful, absolutely everyone. Air ambulance came, were very reassuring. And in fact, it's his only memory of that time. He said, I can't remember anything except... seeing an oval shape and then going up. And of course the oval shape is where they pack you like a parcel, just leaving your face out, and then the going up in the helicopter, which was obviously the standout incident as far as he was concerned. And then he went over to QA in Cosham, which again I literally can't speak highly enough of.
Fantastic.
And he was there for 10 days, and then he was one of the very, very tiny percentage of patients who walked out of critical care.
Well, I have to say, both Judith and I have been saying this. My, you know, you look absolutely fantastic. I mean, you look as you know, well as well could be.
Well, yes, thank you. And it is down to Carol. She literally saved my life. So did St Mary's. So did the air ambulance and the QA. I mean, team effort doesn't begin to describe it.
Well, that's fantastic news. And I think you're doing something with your son to support the air ambulance, because without that, and it is, you know, effectively funded by charity, a lot of people on the Isle of Wight couldn't get over to the mainland for the treatment they need.
That's right. Tally's doing a Tom Petty all-dayer in Eastleigh on the 15th of April. I see you're looking at the poster. If anyone goes to Facebook to look at the poster, Mai actually drew the cartoon of Tom Petty on the poster.
Yeah, this is Sunday the 15th of April. It's over in Eastleigh, and it's at the Steamtown Brew Company, which is 1 Bishopstoke Road in Eastleigh. You can get there from the Isle of Wight in a day. It's very easy to do. And there is... a web address, which is www.tompettyalldayer.tk. I don't know what the TK is for, but anyway, it is .tk, tompettyalldayer.tk. It's a tribute to Tom Petty, and your son is going to be playing, isn't he?
Yes, along with loads of other people from all over Hampshire, well, all over the UK, actually. His friends are coming down. Basically, it's the list of all Tom Petty songs. They all picked one or two. They'll all be doing their own take on it.
Yeah.
And there's a sing-along at the end as well of the absolutely all-time favourites.
Oh, we love a sing-along.
Yeah, yeah, sing-along, great thing. Yes.
And all donations are in aid of Hampshire and Isle of Wight Air Ambulance, so
yes.
That's fantastic news.
And he's he's already raised 428 from donations from people who perhaps won't be able to be there on the day.
Oh, okay, well, that's fantastic. I think we should actually listen to him now.
That'd
so here, is this the first time Tally's been on radio or not?
Not at all, no. No. The first time on your radio.
Okay, here it is. It's the Lords of Time. It's a band that he's in, isn't it?
Yes.
The Lords of Time and the bird it sang. Now, we've just got a few more moments with Mai and Carol Tro in the studio here at Vectis Radio. Mai and Carol, I understand, as well as all these, well, almost hundreds of books you've been writing, which are fiction and non-fiction, there's something else you do, which is ghostwriting. Can you just tell us very quickly about that, please? Because that sounds fascinating.
Ghostwriting, it is fascinating, because you're telling somebody else's story, but using your own words.
Yeah.
One I did, I was being an East End gangster. The other, I was being a Holocaust survivor.
Wow.
And the range of emotions you can imagine involved in all that is truly extraordinary. And I'm delighted that I've been able to do those.
Yeah.
Because it is a different dimension. It also tests me as a writer to make sure that I can cope with
a very
different kind of writing technique.
And are there any people who have approached you that you've had to turn down?
Yes.
Right.
Sometimes because the story isn't strong enough.
Right, okay. And how do you tell somebody that they're boring?
You've got to be very diplomatic indeed. The trouble is that we're programmed, aren't we, to think that we as individuals are incredibly important. We have to be, otherwise we wouldn't be here.
Yeah.
And therefore everybody assumes that their story is kapow and really has to be out there, and sadly it isn't true.
Yeah.
Holocaust survivor, yes, of course.
Yes.
Son of a great train robber, yes, of course. But anything else, I don't know, it's a bit iffy. It might not grab the reader's attention in the way that they think.
Oh, interesting. Well, look, I've got this book in my hand called The Black Book, which is one that you've written recently, and I'm really going to be taking this on holiday with me in the near future, because it's all about those people who the Nazis would have had a crack at as soon as they'd invaded. Can you just tell us a little bit more about that in the run-up to the news? We can only be very, very quick.
Right. This was July 1940. The Germans were about to invade, and the SS drew up a list of 2,694 people they wanted to interview,
yeah.
Which actually means kill.
Yeah.
There were three islanders there, by the way.
Ah.
So I won't tell you any more about that. I'm going to let you find them yourself. Okay.
Well, I'm going on a German cruise later in the year. This is not a book that I'm going to be taking on that one, but I am really looking forward to it. It just came yesterday by Amazon. I think most of your books, Carol and Mai, they're available on Amazon, aren't they?
They are. I think they're all in print still at the moment. Just one or two might be from, what do they call them, other suppliers.
Yes.
But most of them are in print. The Maxwells, the Lestrades have both been taken up by a company called Thistle, who have redone them. The Marlowes, the Grandin Bachelors, and the Britannia are all in print. And a new one, which Mai forgot to mention, also set in Rome, is about to come out shortly from Endeavour, and that is called The Year of the Snake.
Ah.
And that's the first one that our names are both on the cover, which we're very excited about.
Well, good luck with that. I hope that goes down very well. You've been wonderful guests. Thank you very much for coming in today. And don't forget, here on Vectis Radio, we are going to have a Maitro mystery. It's an Inspector Lestrade mystery, actually, called Exit Centre Stage, which was recorded 20 years ago with Mai on it. Carol is apparently screaming on it.
Yeah, my scream is there.
And Kenneth Kendall and some wonderful, wonderful island actors who we know, like Bill Meatyard, are on it as well. So we're looking forward to that. It's going to be in May. We'll let you know when. Thanks very much for coming into the studio. Next up here on Vectis Radio is the Visit Isle of Wight show.